We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Final seconds playing out. End of a fabulous tournament. Rebound into the hands of Hunter. Virginia with the all-time turnaround title.
You look at us and, you know, we're not the most imposing team physically, but we talked about it. Just when they played together, and they're so talented. They're such good players. They probably don't get enough credit for how good they are, but they had something, that synergy. Like I said, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And I'm telling you, they could do things with the strength and numbers that I just kind of stood back. And we pushed them hard. Oh, man, we did in practice. They prepared well. But they had something about them that was, again, you know, just multiplied.
Middays on the Score.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Chicago Wolves have clinched their third straight Central Division title. Be there Saturday and Sunday for their final regular season games. For tickets or playoff information, visit ChicagoWolves.com. That was Tony Bennett. He is now a national champion. And here to talk about it, Eli Hershkovich, who is on Twitter at Eli Hershkovich of WSCR and the Action Sports Network. And he joins us on the Al Pamati Ford Hotline. Over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hello, Eli.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Well, we gotta milk this while we can, right? This is it. This is your own shining moment. Here it is. That game delivered ultimately, didn't it?
Yeah, and thinking about everyone who said this is going to be a terrible basketball game. You have two teams that operate at a slow pace. Virginia averaging the fewest possessions per game in college basketball, and it had the most three-pointers made on each side in the championship history. So it was a tremendous game offensively. Both teams averaged more than 1 point per possession. The finish, DeAndre Hunter scoring 27 points, a little redemption from his last couple games, poor second halves in each of those games, and putting up the big three to not only take the lead or to not only tie it up at the end of regulation, but to also take the lead with just over 2 minutes left, 75-73, and Virginia never looked back.
No, and they got breaks all the way along, and good teams make those breaks count. I thought that moment where you had a pass go out of bounds because Virginia, Kyle Guy, was trying to call a timeout. With 1 second left, Texas Tech gets the ball back and a chance. I thought that was it. I thought the bubble had burst again, and yet this number one seed, the only team to lose to a 16, gets themselves a national title. They were able to survive a lot of bumps in the road. I wonder if one bump stands out more than anything else to you about that Cavaliers team, though.
Yeah, a couple bumps. Just because I had futures on Texas Tech, so I bet long-term on Texas Tech. I bet long-term on Auburn, some other teams as well. I had four futures that lost their leads with under 25 seconds to go throughout the NCAA tournament. So that was rough to watch. But right, you think about one of the plays that stood out to me yesterday in overtime when Texas Tech had a three-point lead with 2:30 to go, and Kyle Guy trips over a Diakite screen.
Yeah.
The ref is literally standing right in front of the play, and he calls a foul on Moretti when it should have been a travel. Guy was out of bounds with the ball as well. And they call foul Moretti, which made absolutely no sense to me. There was also a jump ball in the latter part of the second half where it seemed like Texas Tech had the ball on their hands on the ball for about 3 seconds. And you think about a jump ball that was called 5 minutes prior where Mooney ripped the ball out of Guy's hands. And within 1 second, they called the jump ball. But instead, Kyle Guy gets to the free throw line and Tariq Owens picks up his fifth foul seconds after a jump ball should have been called. So it was a little ridiculous watching the refs take the game away from Texas Tech. I'm not saying it was rigged. I'm not saying anything like that. But Texas Tech or Virginia definitely got the benefit of the calls.
I always wonder, too, if we looked at every national champion's path through an entire tournament with the forensic capabilities that we have now with replay, everybody's would look like this, right? I mean, unless somebody is just, you know, has a Lou Alcindor and they're just romping to a title, that couldn't we find any, if we went back with the same technology and fine-tooth comb of every single call in every single game, wouldn't they all seem maddening one way or another?
Definitely. But just the way instant replay has evolved over these last 3-4 seasons, especially in college basketball and where everything is being marginalized. And obviously the play that a lot of people were ticked off about was the Moretti, where he got his pinky on the ball. Mm-hmm. And they originally called it out on Virginia with just over a minute to go. Cavaliers were up by 2 at the time. And they looked at it for 10 minutes or so, and they ended up calling up Moretti. And it might have been the right call. It definitely was on the borderline of inconclusive. You think about a play that went Texas Tech's way with just over a minute to go, and they called that inconclusive, and they gave the ball back to Texas Tech. This time around, it might have touched Moretti's pinky more so than the play in regulation. But what's more frustrating about these tight plays down the stretch in the championship game and the Final Four games as well, is they're missing these blatant calls before it. Kyle Guy held Moretti, which is what led to Moretti possibly touching it and giving the ball back to Virginia. While Auburn did foul Virginia with under 2 minutes to go in the Final Four, Ty Jerome traveled right before that or right after that. So it's frustrating to watch the refs, again, take the ball out of the hands of the teams that deserve to win. I'm not just saying that because I had money on these teams. Instant replay has gone a little bit too far in the fact that you're looking at these calls for 10 minutes. You're slowing down the game that much, but the refs are missing the more blatant calls that should have been called either seconds before or seconds after that.
Texas Tech's head coach Chris Beard make the biggest name for himself in this tournament. I know he's up and coming as the season went along, but if you had to handicap things, where would he be headed if bigger schools come calling?
I think Texas Tech is still the place for him. Think about where the Big 12 is right now, and in Kansas is still going to be a decent team next season, but they're not bringing in a Naismith Player of the Year candidate like they did when Dietrich Lawson sat out in his transfer year from Memphis and played for Kansas last year, a graduate transfer for them, and still a good guard play for the Jayhawks. But Texas Tech can reign king in the Big 12 for still a little bit more time to me. This Tech defense has the best defense in college basketball, and that can sustain itself for a while, even if and when Jared Culver does indeed lead for the NBA draft. UCLA is the program that would come calling, and if they throw $10, $15 million his way per year, I can't see why he would say no to that. But if he wants to build something in a Power 5 conference, and the Pac-12 had a down year this year, and I don't see it getting much better next season, while Oregon could be a top 10 team if Lewis King, a 5-star, sticks around for his sophomore season, the Pac-12 isn't going to be an elite team or an elite conference for the sustainable future. And the Big 12 will always be a Power 5 conference than a Power 2 conference across college basketball. So for me, similar to what Houston did with Calvin Sampson, you extend him for the long term right now. And granted, you can always get a buyout, but if you're Chris Beard, it makes a lot of sense to stay at Texas Tech.
As we speak, Jeff Goodman of Stadium is reporting that UCLA is in fact close to hiring Mick Cronin away from Cincinnati. So what do you make of that news?
I personally think Mick Cronin is a terrible coach. So if you think about just his late game execution with Cincinnati over their last two NCAA tournament games, the Bearcats blew a 20-point lead to Nevada. And well, granted, Virginia did kind of end the narrative that slow paced teams, defensive led teams can't win in the NCAA tournament by cutting down the nets last night. Cincinnati has not been able to get over the hump in the NCAAs in March Madness. And that Nevada blown lead 2 years ago stands out. They blew a lead to Iowa earlier this March when they had a comfortable double-digit lead in the second half. So his strategies haven't necessarily worked out of the NCAA tournament. Now, if he can improve UCLA's defense, obviously that was their roughest patch this past season. They had some good offensive players, a 5-star big, Moses Brown, Jalen Hance. I liked what they brought offensively, but if Cronin can improve that defense, maybe you can contend for a top two spot in the Pac-12. But still, that doesn't really get you over the hump. I don't think he's a coach that can get you back to where UCLA was in the middle of the 2000s.
Got some numbers here from betonline.ag. These are the odds to win the 2020 NCAA championship. And I want to know if in the mind of Action Sports Network's Eli Hershkovich, there might be a value play. UCLA, before this news, was at 100-1 right next to USC. Kentucky's 5-1. That's your favorite right now. Duke 6-1. Virginia 13-2. Michigan State 8-1. Michigan and North Carolina 12-1, maybe some value there. Gonzaga at 14, Villanova 16, Kansas at 20, Oregon 21, Arizona and Louisville at 25. There's a group at 33-1, Auburn, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Texas Tech, and Texas. The group at 50-1 is the aforementioned Cincinnati. Obviously, they may take them off the board, but we don't know who their coach is. Houston, Iowa, Marquette, Purdue, and Syracuse. Those are all 50-1. The 66-1s are Florida State, LSU, Maryland, Memphis, Ohio State, Seton Hall, and Wisconsin. Anything you like? Anything raise your eyebrows there?
Yeah, I did a story on this yesterday looking at my way too early top 10 on the Action Network and also some future plays mixed in there too. Marquette at 50-1, you mentioned there, and if you shop around, depending on where you place your bets, 40-1 might pop up in the mix there, too. I like either of those from Marquette, a team that's going to bring all of its starters back. The key for Marquette is, can you avoid Marcus Howard wearing down the stretch? They had a decent backup point guard, but Howard needing to play in basically an entire game, can you sustain your season when Marcus Howard and the wrist injury popped up, too, in the Big East tournament and in that Murray State game? But the key for them is Marcus Howard staying healthy and just him being having 100% energy for the NCAA tournament, which definitely was a factor in that Murray State game. They have the Hauser brothers back. Zakar Annam is one of the better two-way players in college basketball. Theo John also back. So I like Marquette there. Should win the Big East next season as long as, again, Howard is able to sustain himself down the stretch. Maryland at 66-1 is an interesting play, too. While Bruno Fernando is going to go to the NBA draft most likely, you bring Jalen Smith back. They announced that news yesterday. I have him just outside my top 10, but this team bringing back a lot of good guard play. Eric Ayala is a sophomore. Anthony Collins, a freshman, as a junior. The question is, can you get over the hump as having Mark Turgeon as your head coach? I doubted that a little bit more than I should have going down the stretch in the NCAA tournament. I had a future on Maryland as well this past year, and I might have been a little too early on the turf. So they're an interesting play. And the one that you didn't mention is Ohio State. Depending on where you shop around, you might be able to get them at 75-1, likely bring it back, soon-to-be junior forward Caleb Wesson. If he can just learn how to stay out of foul trouble and not pick up ticky-tack flagrant fouls, Ohio State has a legitimate Big Ten Player of the Year candidate next season. Luther Muhammad and Dwayne Washington, two really good breakout candidates for them at the wing spots, and then three top 50 recruits, including a top 30 point guard, and they're losing their two of their primary ball handlers, but you're getting, again, a top 30 point guard. And Chris Holtmann, to me, is the next Chris Beard in terms of breakout coaches. So I could see Ohio State not only contending for a top three spot in the Big Ten, but making a run in the NCAA tournament.
Do any teams, do any programs look at the systems that got run by Texas Tech and Virginia? Granted, they are different, but so defensively focused. Do we look now at like your preseason too early top 10? Do we look now at futures odds and change how we organize them with the one and done moving out eventually, with these systems maybe becoming more and more important over the next few years? Or is this just these just a couple of teams that got it going at the right time and have the kind of kids to buy into what they were so focused on doing?
No, definitely. And you think about the pack line defense that Tony Bennett inherited from his father, Dick Bennett. That was a strategy that worked yesterday against Texas Tech, and he wasn't going to sway away from it, but it worked out. And I was surprised to see Texas Tech's ball pressure not be more of a factor, especially down the stretch. They were able to create some turnovers in the latter part of that second half to bring it back and eventually give him a 3-point lead before DeAndre Hunter tied it up. But that Chris Beard defense, having ball pressure from all over the floor, we saw how much it impacted Michigan State in the Final Four. They weren't able to execute in the half court for much of that game, besides a 3 or 4 minute stretch in the latter part of the second half. So defense can win championships. I know in the NFL, the way you're moving towards spread offenses, and we saw Patrick Mahomes yesterday at the Texas Tech game, obviously a Texas Tech alum, what he brings to the NFL with that Kansas City offense. It's different in the NFL, though, to me, than it is in college basketball. I'm not going to necessarily move my future odds around based or, and predicated off of elite defense. Marquette had a better defense than it did last year, and it might improve even more in the upcoming season. But they're not going to have a top 20 adjusted defense, but they could still win in the NCAA tournament. So, and you think about Auburn, who was literally a second away from being in the championship game. They had the top 50 adjusted defensive efficiency in college basketball. So it's not like this team, and they should have been in the title game if not for the double triple that should have been called. So it's not as if defense can get you the championship, it can win you a championship, but offense can also get you there. And I'm not ready to say that defense is the trigger point when I start making my future bets in the coming months.
Eli, outstanding job this
year. Well
done, sir. Glad we've had you as a resource and look forward to more.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on all tournament long.
That is Eli Hershkovich of WSCR and the Action Sports Network, brought to you by Campland RV. It's Campland RV's huge tent event from April 5th through the 14th. Find great deals just in time for camping season. Go to CamplandRV.com for details. Campland RV, RV buying made easy. Just a short drive off I-94 in Northwest Indiana. Yesterday at remodeled Wrigley Field,
yes,
you and I had the opportunity to walk around, to go on these new catwalks, to see how it lays out, to take a look at the Catalina Club, etc. And of course, we now see people who are grumbling about some of what's going on. There are some good arguments that I think are valid and deserve to be aired. And then there are some bad ways of going about it as well. And we can explore the right way and the wrong way to bitch about gentrification at a ballpark.
People fear change. It's a totally normal process of life, but there's going to be bitching. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall. As the Big Ten West champion Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Michigan State, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. So we had an opportunity before the game. We walked over to Wrigley Field and said, all right, so what's this whole new thing? And we went upstairs, and you ran into an old friend of yours who was in the Catalina Club.
Of course, he's the guy in the Catalina Club, too. I love Rob, but as we're walking by with this brand new hoity-toity, you know, big money kind of thing, I look up, and it's everybody's got that friend, right? The guy who gets into the nice places, it's Rob.
See, I completely understand the classic everyman piece, and it does seem that when this was the Tribune piece, the front page story was written, it was that idea. Let's go find these people who are being priced out, the usual fan. This is, of course, making room for the people that can afford all the luxuries and the premiums, the gentrification of Wrigley Field. Morgan Green wrote the piece, and you're always going to find these people, and there's something to it. I don't entirely dismiss the idea of it being kind of too bad that now where it used to be your seat, that instead now it's a private club for Joe Ricketts to hold Scott Walker fundraisers. That's what it is. And that's what, and outside of baseball, that's where these things go on. And I understand you, the embittered feeling that comes with it. And even though there's, 18 months of warning and an opportunity to relocate your seats, that you still get to the game and you're in different seats.
What's different, though, is that this ballpark isn't any other ballpark. You know, you get a brand new franchise or a new ballpark or something like that, and you've got an opportunity to create something. It is brand new. You can put these things there and the high-priced tickets here and the big suites over there. But Wrigley Field, because it is Wrigley Field, because it's got to stay the way it is, because so much of it is landmarked, because they have the footprint that they have, they've got to add these things in places where people otherwise used to sit. Like, your chair isn't your chair anymore. And that I get that. It feels different. They've made it gorgeous. We were walking around, and there's room and there's places in all the concourses to be and to walk around.
Yeah, even though it's a
and
packed
look at
house,
the field,
it didn't feel packed.
It really didn't. I mean, the walkway that goes out and around the Catalina Club gets a little bit narrow. You can see it in the video we put up for Leftovers yesterday. But as you're walking down, don't do what I did. Don't film footage there. Don't do that. People yell at you. They don't like you when you do that. But it's fine. You walk by, one passes on the other side. It's not that big a deal.
And all these fans were given opportunities to pick from new seats. They weren't completely kicked out. They weren't forced to spend gobs of money to be part of the Catalina Club. But this is the logic that won't play. Where they talk to a woman from Lakeview who says she's been a season ticket holder for 19 years. For 18, she sat in the upper deck behind home plate. So the people around me, we sat there for years. The guy behind me, 30 years. The family next to me, 35. And we watched a lot of bad baseball, and this is how we're paid back.
Hmm.
See, I'm not buying that. That's not how the math works.
Not quite it.
That's not you don't get rewarded for watching bad baseball. Why you wanted to watch bad baseball, why you wanted to pay thousands of dollars to watch bad baseball, that's on you. There isn't some pot of gold that you haven't invested that to earn points to, that you can apply towards something. You don't rack up credits for having watched bad baseball that you can then redeem for other things.
It doesn't work that way, but I can't blame somebody for feeling like that.
But you made the choice
of course,
to watch. You
of course,
paid for bad baseball.
You might
That's
feel
on you.
Like you're holding on to Cubs bucks or something. You know that you've done this and put it in. You put in the work and now you're owed something. But it feels that way. And that's when when you get a winner, when you get Bryant to Rizzo, and then the World Series ends. You're like, oh, I deserved this. But that was the payoff. Mm-hmm. You know that is your pay. It's not future seats and it's not future monies and it's for a different group of fans now. I mean, that's where baseball is going. That's where all these ballparks are going. Well, the ones that can actually get fans to attend.
And was it your rideshare driver who actually said to you, unironically, that he would give back the World Series championship if it meant lower ticket prices?
Yeah, I can't imagine that Mike, the rideshare driver, is I can't imagine his feelings are everyone's feelings. But I pressed him on it three different times, and the guy was like, "Yep, nope, I'd give back the World Series if I could just go to sit in the bleachers four or five more times."
Yeah, I'm not going to completely dismiss the awareness of the ultra wealthy just clawing territory that they want away from you and pushing you out of where you've been. That's kind of it's not pretty. It's kind of gross.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand the economic factors involved, and I don't want you saying that you somehow are more entitled to continued value just because you decided to pay money to watch bad baseball. Not how it works. News here, per John Heyman.
What you got?
We talked about this fight yesterday, and Chris Archer has been suspended 5 games. Yasiel Puig gets 2. That's per John Heyman.
Okay.
That's for the fight that we saw between the Pirates and the Reds. But remember, a starting pitcher suspended 5 games is a 1-game suspension.
Yes, it is a 1-game suspension.
And Yasiel Puig getting a 2-game suspension is an actual 2-game suspension.
Yeah, I mean, he came off the bench and did that. Plus, he's Yasiel Puig, so I would imagine that the office of Major League Baseball already has it out for that guy, at least a little bit. Fine, whatever. It slaps on the wrist for something that was somewhat entertaining and just kind of a breach of character from Chris Archer, I thought. That guy's out there having fun being one of the leaders for the let the kids play kind of joie de vivre, and now it's gone. Now you throw behind somebody because you get shelled out into the river. It's less fun than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that baseball still hasn't figured out how to suspend starting pitchers appropriately. And you say it was one start the equivalent if you look at percentage
yeah.
of what
well,
they do.
Well, when you
do.
Think about it, I mean, if you miss one start, you got to make roster moves now and you tax bullpens. I mean, it could be that trickle down kind of effect of him missing one start is so much more impactful as it is. I mean, if he misses more than one, is what I'm saying.
And manager David Bell has been given 1 game also.
Oh, all right. That? Yeah, he was hot.
Yeah, he was. This is Lewis in Downers Grove on the score. Hello, Lewis.
Hi.
What's up, Lewis?
Hey, so I've got a quick question regarding last night's championship game. And do you guys think, I mean, at the end of overtime, Virginia, you're going to know what play I'm talking about immediately. Virginia tried to steal, knocked the ball out of bounds, replay, a slow-mo replay.
Yeah.
Shows it grazes a Texas Tech player's finger. Is that not indicative of how replay is kind of killing the spirit of the game and how we are not taking into account, like, intent when we when watching replay?
That's a completely correct question. That you have
valid.
You've identified the valid question to ask. You have. And I can look at it in a way that says, yes, he was the last person to touch the ball before it went out of bounds, yet he did nothing to cause the ball to go out of bounds.
Yeah, I mean, it had me rethinking replay. I mean, I'm the guy who wants to get it right, replay everything, make sure the calls are right. I'm that kind of dude. And last night, this call made it feel like I got to wonder whether replay's in the right place or not.
Loader hasn't worked the last three times. Ball bounces out, picked up by Moretti, and it's out of bounds staying at this end. That was Hunter reaching in and knocking it out.
They want to look at it again. I think they got it right, though.
Gene, you don't see anything there different, do you?
I don't see anything there that jumps out at all, no. That just looks like a ball out of bounds for Texas Tech right now. You know, at times, guys, I will tell you, when you start running replay really, really slow, you get a little bit of distortion in there as well. So you've got to be cognizant to that. It's tight, though. It really is close. Wow, guys, when I see this one from the baseline, this angle right here from the baseline, this puts Moretti's pinky on it. Now, what the officials are too, it's two will look. If they're really indecisive or having some discussion on this, they'll go to the third, and then they'll consult.
Virginia ball.
Returned it.
Virginia ball.
That's a heck of a job of officiating by this crew guy.
I know it was, and that's a good job of breaking it down on the call from Steratore. That's exactly what you want out of your broadcast, and that's, I guess, what you want out of your refereeing crew, but that sucks. Like any play like that, if you hold the ball and it just gets slapped out of your hand, you're going to be the last one to touch it. That's just physics. It's a round ball. Your hands are gripped that way on the thing. It's going to come off your pinky. That last Look, pinky is almost always I, the I, thing. That
I'll say it this way. He was the last person to touch the ball. He did not do anything to cause the ball to go out of bounds.
I know, but it just there's intent.
That's what I'm saying.
That's obvious there, or it lacks evidence there, and it didn't feel right. It's just not the right thing. And I just hate that call has me on philosophical heels, like looking at what that means in that sport in particular.
He's Connor McKnight. I am Dan Bernstein, and when we come back briefly, we must make note of a dubious baseball achievement in a dubious baseball place.
Where no one watches, and no one should. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Before we say some thank yous, I want to recognize a baseball record that was set. Chris Davis of the Orioles, who is referred to very kindly in this ESPN piece, Baltimore Orioles slugger, 0-3 last night, extending his hitless streak to 47 consecutive at-bats.
It's rough.
Breaking the record of Eugenio Velez, the longest hitless streak by a position player in Major League history, according to Elias Sports Bureau data. The other aspect, and maybe this is the silver lining, only 6,585 people saw it.
The Orioles are a real tough ball club, despite the start they got off to. 0-47 is a long damn time. Chris Davis is under contract, albeit only at $21 million, for the next 4 years.
And that was not the fewest people that have ever been to a game at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, because remember, they played a game in front of nobody.
That's right.
After the Baltimore rioting.
Yeah.
Remember who the play-by-play guy was?
Chris Ranji.
It was.
Chris Ranji did play-by-play.
He did that game.
For that game in front of all of his friends.
Chris Davis's last hit was September 14th, 2018. It was a double. It's a long time ago.
We thank Joe Sheehan and Eli Hershkovich for joining us today. The producers, Zawoski, Camp, and Diaz, Brian Gertsch, had the video feed. Kevbo, Kevin Zipak with the updates. Tomorrow, Mike Florio. And talk about why the San Francisco 49ers are showing interest in Stephen Gostkowski. I don't know. We'll find out from him tomorrow. And we're going to preview the Masters.
Excellent.
With David Dusek of Golf Week. We always love having him on. He's the guy that gave us Francisco Molinari last year.
That's right.
Remember? He gave us he's
had his pick.
Yep, he has been on top of it. So he is going to join us to preview the tournament we will all be watching over the weekend. Next up, Transition with Lawrence Holmes ahead of his conversation at noon with Joe Madden. Keep it here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.